Welcome to a Friday edition of Zero Block 30. It is brought to you by our friends at SeatGeek. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It is by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere with just a few tips. I can instantly find seats. I actually just added SeatGeek to buy tickets to the NASCAR 600 race, which we're going to be a part of this weekend. That's the reason why we're in Charlotte. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticketed buy experience even more easy than it's ever been. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And it gets you most bang for your buck. SeatGeek grades every single ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every single purchase of SeatGeek is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on the best type of ticket, from sports to concert to comedy and theater and so much more. Just download the SeatGeek app today and you're going to get $10 off by using the promo code CHAPS. That's promo code CHAPS for $10 off your first purchase. Cue the music. All right, so we have myself, I am Chaps as always. We also have Captain Cons, Kate. We are all here at Heist Brewery just outside of Charlotte. Inside Charlotte?
Inside Charlotte.
We are, Charlotte, we are inside of you.
My lady queen city, we are inside of you.
Yes.
And this beer is delicious.
Some would say. We are in the innards of Charlotte, and we're about to have a great time. But I'm excited about this podcast today. It's going to be a little bit different. We're not going to have any rounds in the magazine today. What we are going to have is a little fireside chat. Because one thing that we've talked about the last three Memorial Days is that Veteran Bro Twitter, very specifically Veteran Bro Twitter.
Oh,
Veteran
up, bro.
Facebook. Veteran Facebook.
It's not about
too.
Barbecues.
You thought this weekend was about sitting in the sun with your family having a barbecue? You thought it was about dogs? You thought it was about toasting dogs, bro?
It's about crying.
It's about feeling sad.
You better fucking cry.
Yeah.
If you don't cry
Relax,
several
Francis.
Times, just let's bring it down a little bit. So we wanted to start that off and just say, first of all, that's not true. We wanted to record our podcast for Memorial Day at a brewery. We're starting our weekend off with a little bit of beers. But we're also going to start your weekend off on the right spot, and that is remembering the true meaning of Memorial Day, which is to remember the fallen, obviously. So one of my Marines, David Sanka, he died in Afghanistan. His wife is going to join us in a little bit, and her name is Tori. I'm so excited for you to hear this interview. So we're not going to waste a whole lot of time at the start of the podcast. We're going to jump right into it, and then we'll meet you on the other side. Here's Tori Sanka.
Help, 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 right, help. Left, right, left.
All right, now on Zero Block 30, I'm privileged to have somebody who I've looked at as like a beacon of light in the Gold Star community. I think that a lot of times whenever we look at people in the Gold Star community, they appear really sad all the time. And Tori has rebounded so great. Tori Sanka, I'm glad to have you on my show.
I'm glad to be here too. Thank you for having me.
So we were just reminiscing before we press play. We don't know each other very well, but I feel like I know you a little bit about what's going on in your life just through social media. Tell me a little bit about when you and David first met.
Oh gosh. So we met in high school, and we were kind of, both of us were kind of quiet, I guess would be the good way to put it. I played sports, so I played soccer. So a lot of my friends were the athletes, and he was kind of, he did track, but he was kind of one of the nerdy kids where he was really smart, and just a good guy. We met in gym class, so we were both on the same softball team is kind of how we started talking. It was one of those things where, like, we didn't really talk for, like, the first couple of weeks. It was just, like, we were kind of near each other, and then after that, he finally said hi and
worked up some courage.
Exactly, yeah. and so that was where it all started, was gym class in senior year of high school, and that was kind of it from there. He had known at that point that he was going to join the Marines. And I had already signed a scholarship to play soccer in Kansas. And so, you know, we both kind of knew our journeys, where we were going at that point. And I think it wasn't really until graduation that we really kind of started talking about seriously, like, okay, what are we doing here? Like, you're going to go to boot camp and I'm going to go to college. And
It's the very typical, I'm going to Marine Corps out of school. Like, we write memes about it all the time.
Exactly. Like, it's totally that.
I'm going to graduate boot camp. I got to get married 3 months after.
So, and that was pretty much it. Like, once he graduated boot camp, he went to MP school. And then that was when he found out about K-9. And it was kind of like, then that was when he went to K-9 school, he met a lot more, you know, like people who were older than him. And they were like, oh yeah, well, you know, like all the benefits are when you get married. And so like, if you've got a girl, like go ahead and marry her. And so that was sort of when we started talking about it. And I guess it was, he was at Fort Leonard Wood in MP school when he proposed to me. So I suppose it was actually before K-9 school.
So you guys are probably 19, right?
Yeah. So we were 19 when we got engaged and 19 when we got married. So it was totally that typical.
Was there ever a moment looking back now where you're like, holy shit, I was 19 and jumping into something that I was not ready for?
Yeah. The older I get, the more I'm like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that our parents let us get married. And they were all like, okay, sure. Like this, you know, and I mean, they were all really supportive. We 100% had all their support. But I think now, like I said, the older I get, and I have a younger brother who's 5 years younger than me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, he can't graduate from college. Like, he's not old enough yet. And here we were getting married at 19. So yeah.
And I look at my younger daughter now, she's 13, almost 14. And the prospect of her being married in 5 years makes me want to vomit.
I'm sure it does. I can't even imagine. Like I said, it's still crazy to look back on.
Oh my gosh. So you got married when you were 19. Did you stop going to school in Kansas?
Yeah. So I had stopped going to school. That was what was kind of cool. So I was in Kansas when he was in Missouri. So I was only about 4 hours away. So I'd visit every other weekend. And, you know, we had to do the whole, like, he wasn't supposed to be in my car because he couldn't be riding in like personal vehicles and that kind of thing. And so, you know, there were definitely times where he'd like duck down when we were driving. And so, yeah, so after that, I kind of knew I didn't want to be in Kansas anymore. So I moved back to Colorado and we got married that November. So in November or December, basically, I moved out to 29 Palms where he had gotten stationed and there was nowhere to go to college. So at that point I had, I hate to say drop out because it wasn't like, oh, I dropped out of school. It was just, there wasn't really anywhere for me to go. And looking back, that was probably a blessing because I had no idea what I wanted to do anyway. So really not having school, like I went to the community college out there for a little bit.
Right. But not a whole lot. I mean, 29 Palms is desolate. Like, there's nothing out there.
Yeah, there's tumbleweeds blowing all over that town.
Now, looking back with how huge Instagram is, because it wasn't that big whenever he was going through school, do you ever regret that you don't have all those hashtag bae, hashtag my hero, boyfriend, my hero?
I had that sticker on the back of my car that was like what did it say? Something
half my
about
heart's in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, something stupid like that. And I was so proud of that sticker. Like, he got it for me for my birthday. And I was like, I will treasure this forever. And that was when we were in Fort Leonard Wood that he was like, you might need to take that off your car. Cause if we're driving around, like, they're going to know that I'm a Marine and that I'm in here. Cause he was so like a rule follower, you know,
and you're just paranoid as a junior Marine. Yeah. You don't want to get caught and get in trouble.
Yeah.
So you moved to 29 Palms and then he found out that he was going to deploy. Were you, as the wife of a Marine, were you nervous before his deployment, or were you, this is something that you had been preparing yourself for emotionally for a while?
I mean, so when I got there, he was supposed to deploy later the next year, but he didn't actually go. So that was like, there were like five guys from 3MEF that deployed, and then they came back before they kind of sent the whole unit out. So I'd been there for almost 2 years before he deployed with Chris, and there were like 33 of them on that deployment. And so I think I hadn't really had a real life experience with it yet. It was kind of like, I was so young and naive that it was one of those things that was always in the back of my mind, but it was never like, it's like, well, they're going to be okay, right? Like, they have to be okay. This is, you know, I think I still had a lot of that naivety then. It wasn't until after that deployment and when Chris got killed and when I think there were five or six of them that lost limbs that deployment, that really, I think that was the first time that it was like, holy cow, this is war and it's real and it's actually touching us in a really personal way.
I remember being an instructor at the schoolhouse at that time when all those guys were losing their legs and when Chris was killed. And I remember just being gutted. Like, there's got to be something that I can do differently. Like, how are we training these guys? Because we went long periods where if people were getting injured, it was like normal war stuff where they're getting shot or blown up in IEDs. These guys are getting killed on missions and things like that. So I'm sure that made you a little bit more apprehensive. Yeah.
That was definitely, because I think the first guy who got injured, I want to say it was like 3 months into that deployment. And that was kind of like, up until then, you know, we didn't really have a lot of going on. David was pretty much out that entire deployment. Like, I really didn't get to talk to him. He didn't have any kind of phone or computer for most of that first deployment. And so, you know, for the most part, we didn't really have a lot of an idea of what was going on. And it wasn't until they started coming back and they were all in San Diego and we went down there to visit them. And it was just like, oh my gosh, like you hurt for these guys who are your friends, but then you're also like, my husband and all my other friends are still out there. And that was one thing about that unit, is that we were all really, really close. I mean, that was something that we were hanging out all the time, all on the weekends. You know, UFC was such a big thing then. And so we were always having the UFC fights and ordering pizza. And so it wasn't, you know, it's not just your husband, it's your husband and all your friends too. And it was definitely a really kind of hopeless feeling, not hopeless in the fact that, you know, we didn't think they were all going to not come back, but just what can you do? You know, we really were just there waiting for them to come home.
So when you had all that stressors and you see like essentially the carnage going on and David tells you that he wants to do MARSOC, are you like, what the hell?
Yeah, that was a pretty tough conversation.
Wait, let me explain to MARSOC is Marine Corps Special Operations Command. We have a lot of civilian listeners. So that's what MARSOC is. It's a special operations branch of the Marine Corps. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so they came back from that deployment on Christmas of 2011. And so he would have gotten out in October of that next year for his first enlistment. And so the plan always was that he was going to get out. He was going to do those 5 years for being an MP, and then he was going to get out and we were going to move back to Colorado. And he worked with MARSOC. He was paired with MARSOC when he was there on that deployment. So he kind of knew a little bit about them, and that was when they really started heavily recruiting. And so they came to 29 Palms and he went, and it's so funny all the stuff I can remember now, but him and a couple of the other guys went to like the informational meeting. And I remember telling him, like, don't write your name down on anything. Like, don't put your email down.
That's good advice.
Don't give them any information because they're going to take it and they're going to run with it. And, you know, I think in the back of his mind, he knew that he wanted to go back and he knew that he wanted to reenlist. And what I always loved and appreciated about him is how much he took my thoughts and my feelings into account. And I think he knew long before we ever really had the discussion about it, that was something that he was going to seriously look into. And he wanted to have all his ducks in a row before he came to me and said, you know, I think I need to do this. And that's pretty much what happened, is he went to a couple of the informational things. They reached out. He tried to reenlist for a couple other things, like to go to Quantico to do the HMX, the presidential security stuff. He was thinking about trying to go down to Lackland, all these other things. And the monitor basically shut all that down and said, if you want to reenlist, the only option we're giving you is MARSOC. And so I think, you know, he kind of felt like that was kind of a sign to him that all these thoughts he had in the back of his mind, all the, you know, the grief over Chris and the other guys that he lost that he worked with while he was there, he really felt like he had this opportunity to go back and he wanted and needed to take that.
Without that, and I mean, it's kind of unfair, but without that survivor's guilt, do you think he would have done it? Do you think he would have went to MARSOC, or is that too much Monday morning quarterbacking?
You know, I think what I asked him when we really had a serious conversation about it, I said, you know, if we weren't married, if I wasn't here, would you go? And he said, absolutely. And that was one of those things where David was a Marine through and through. And I know a lot of people say that, but I just think that that's what he was born to do. And he loved his job and he loved the the physical aspects of it, and he loved the rules and all these things. And I think that he really respected the Marsoc guys.
That being said, I did get onto him before for putting his hands in his pockets.
You know, so. I'm sure you did. I believe that. He wasn't perfect. I'm not saying he was perfect, but he sure tried.
Yeah, he did. He was good.
But I think he just really felt like, you know, he wanted to be a dog handler too. I mean, that was more than anything else. I think the dog part of it really, you know, he had a dream job. He got to work with dogs. He got to be, he loved being physically fit. He was a big runner. You know, all that stuff in this one job, you know, with the caveat that you're going to have to deploy, and it's a dangerous job. And, you know, to him, he lived every day to the fullest and totally believed that if it's my time, it's my time. And I don't feel any less safe, you know, walking down the street in America than I do there, because, you know, it's just, it's going to be what it's going to be. And,
He eventually went and did the MARSOC NDOC and then deployed again with MARSOC. How was the operational tempo from what you remember for him in that deployment?
A lot slower. So he got there, and there, the main mission, from what I believe and from what I've been told, or what he told me, was that they were working really closely with the Afghan National Army there, and their mission, his team's mission, was really to essentially turn that area over to the Afghan Army. So they were working really closely with them and trying to train them. And so the need for a dog wasn't necessarily there a lot of the days. He'd only been there for about 5 weeks when he was killed, but that was the first time that he had left basically the base that they were at.
And how long did it take for you to get, well, first let me ask you, when you get that notification, what happened? How were you notified?
So I was on my way out of the house. I was meeting a friend for dinner who, her husband was also deployed. He wasn't on the same team as David, but he was also with MARSOC and he was also deployed. And so I was heading out of my house to meet her for dinner. I'd walked out the front door when the car had pulled into my driveway. And the first thought I had was, this is like a salesman, because we had a lot of like vacuum salespeople.
Yeah,
that
came Kirby people. Yeah.
Yes, all the time. And so I was like, this is really annoying, because it's like a one car driveway. So they've blocked me in, and now I have to go out there and be like, I'm trying to leave. And I couldn't see them until I got out of the car. And when I saw it was a Navy chaplain and then my casualty officer. And he was a Marine. And as soon as they, like, I could see the dress blues, I was like, this isn't good. And my immediate thought was that he got hurt. I didn't immediately think that he had been killed. I just thought they came here to tell me that he, you know, stepped on an IED or something like that, because that was always what we were worried about with them being canine handlers. It wasn't until I kind of like was able to gather my thoughts as they were, because it was like a really long walk and everything's moving in slow motion and they're looking at me and I'm like already out the door. So they're probably trying to figure out, why is she already out here? And I could see it in their faces, like how somber they were and how, you know, honestly, how nervous they looked, because I'm sure that that's not what they wanted to be doing, you know,
right,
that night. And, you know, they asked if they could come inside, and I said, I'm not really sure I want you to come inside. And I couldn't get the key back in the door. Like, I was shaking so bad that I couldn't get the key back in the lock. And we finally got inside, and we sat down on the couch, and my casualty officer read the letter. You know, it's the typical, we regret to inform you that your husband, Corporal David M. Sonka, was killed in action in Farah province. And I kept asking them, are you sure that it's him? Are you sure? And they said, yes, we're sure. And you know, I mean, I will forever be thankful for my casualty officer more than anything else, but also that chaplain, because they both just, I mean, they just sat there with me, and they did not leave until somebody came over, until one of my friends came over. And they called my parents for me, because I couldn't, you know, I dialed the number, and you know, I just let the chaplain talk for me. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that you don't forget. And I just remember feeling like, this isn't real. There's no way. Like, they have the wrong guy. It's not him.
Right.
And
I want to remind people, at the time you were 21 years old, right, when this happened. And the amount that you're expected to do right after the essentially life-changing decisions for you in the days right after you find this out. How is that process? Because you have to essentially decide where he's going to get buried, like all the funeral arrangements, and your head is still, I'm sure, reeling.
Yeah, it was definitely a whirlwind. I have to be honest, a lot of it is a blur. But one of the things that I was kind of crazy was the next day when they came back. So basically my casualty officer was with me every single day for as long as I was in North Carolina. He was there with me every day. And the next day when he came back over, he had some paperwork for me to sign, just all sorts of stuff, travel stuff, and to go up to Dover and everything. And one of the things he had me sign was a media release. And he said, I'm sorry I have to do this, but they require this because there will most likely be media somewhere along the line, whether it's in Dover or in transit, depending on who picks the story up. This is just a release saying that you're okay with being photographed and you're okay with being, videographered. And if somebody asks for an interview, you're okay with that. And I remember thinking that was kind of weird. Like, that had never occurred to me that, I guess it makes sense. You know, the media picks up stories all the time. And, and that was a really big day that David was killed and his dog was killed and one other Marine with them was killed. But also on that day in Afghanistan, five other U.S. servicemen were killed as well. So it was the most casualties in one day that they had had in a really long time. And so they were definitely thinking that there was going to be media. And so that was kind of one of the first things that was like, this is really strange. I don't understand. Basically we flew to Dover a couple days later, and that was the first time that I had seen his parents since, we'd all been notified, and that was really hard. And then them all coming back and having one of the representatives on behalf of Barack Obama, because I guess sometimes he goes, but if he doesn't, then they send a representative, and that guy was kind of, he didn't really know what to say. And so that was kind of weird too. I just remember feeling like all of this is so
surreal.
This is not really happening. Like this is, I'm going to wake up from this eventually.
When did you get to the point where you could kind of shake off the fog, just for your own experience, where you kind of remember grasping your brain and being like, okay, I've got to focus in here?
I would say probably after the funeral and everything. So after we went to Dover, we went back to North Carolina for about a week, and then I flew to Colorado because that was where he was buried. And I was there for probably 2 weeks. And that was a whirlwind too, trying to plan a funeral, trying to make sure that everybody we needed there was there, because the MARSOC Foundation was absolutely amazing, and they paid for a lot of our friends who were still in the military, and even those who weren't, from all over the country. They paid for their airfare to come to his funeral, and they put them up in hotels. And so trying to coordinate all of that, make sure that we had everybody there, and just all the other little things. I didn't have a moment to kind of stop. And so it wasn't until I got back to North Carolina and was left on my own, basically, not on my own completely. Like I said, my casualty officer, we still had a lot to do as far as trying to get everything, all my stuff moved back to Colorado, and all the other paperwork. I just remember there being so much paperwork afterwards. And I think it wasn't until I got back to my house after that and the dust had kind of settled, and it was like, I remember just feeling really alone, like for the first time. Like it was one of those things where, when you're married to your soulmate, you don't, even when they're away from you, you don't really feel alone. Like they're always kind of, they're a part of you. They're there. And that was the first time that I really sat down and I was like, holy cow, like it is just me now. It's just me sitting here in this, in this house. And I'm going to have to figure out, where do I go from here? And
you've figured it out, like just watching you, you've kind of figured it out. Like in your note that you posted on Facebook the other day, you said that David would be so proud of you because you're working in a field that you're passionate about. Do you look back and you think, fuck man, like I can't believe that I did this? Because I'm sure that there was moments in the journey that was like, I don't know if I can.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, when I moved back to Colorado, there was like a, I guess I moved back in June of that year, and there was like a 6 month period where I just wasn't doing anything. I wasn't in school. I had to unenroll from classes in North Carolina, and I wasn't enrolled anywhere in Colorado, and I didn't have a job. And, I just remember sitting there like, you can't not do anything. Like, he wouldn't want you to just sit here and do nothing for the rest of your life. And so that was when I said, okay, like, I'm going to go enroll in school. And that was really good because that gave me something to focus on. Like, you gotta get back to doing something.
Right.
Yeah. And that was really kind of the start of really, what am I going to do now? And luckily I, at that point I had already decided that I was going to do exercise science. And so getting into a program in Denver was one of the really, truly the best things that happened to me, because I stumbled upon an internship working with cancer patients, right before I graduated. And that just kind of gave me this new meaning. Like, I can do something on a smaller scale level, definitely. But, you know, David loved helping people and doing something bigger than himself. And when I worked with the cancer patients there, I just felt like I have a purpose. Like, I can be here in a way to help these people who are suffering and, you know, just trying to figure out who they are now and what their life looks like. And in a way, like, I connect with that on a different level, but I just really got a lot of healing from that experience. And I got really lucky that that's kind of how I ended up in South Carolina. Is I started looking for jobs with cancer exercise programs, and that's how I got here, and that's what I do now. And it's just really, really inspiring to watch people who have kind of hit rock bottom as far as, you know, the chemo has just totally taken them out, and they've had all these surgeries and trying to recover. And I really I empathize with that feeling of hitting this, who am I now and where do I go from here? And having, you know, to just kind of pick yourself up off the floor. That part of it has been really amazing. It's very, very healing for me as well.
I imagine so. And another aspect that I wanted to touch on too, your boyfriend now.
Yeah.
This motherfucker is about the strongest dude that I can think of. Because you obviously very much still love David and will for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And he seems like he is so supportive about David and your relationship. That's something that from afar, like, I have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing. I definitely, I'm very, very lucky, because I know that a lot of people don't ever find love like I have once, let alone twice. And I mean, I really truly feel you hit it on the head. I will always love David, and I miss him every single day. And that, you know, not really even a minute goes by that I don't have a thought about him during the day, and, you know, something that I wish that I could tell him and that kind of thing. And I, you know, here we are 6 years later, and kind of like I talked about in that post, you know, you sort of expect that some of the stuff is going to go away. Like, at some point I'm going to not long to be able to tell him about my day, but I still do. And, you know, having Ryan now to kind of share that with, I mean, even from the very beginning, I was very upfront about, you know, this is who I am, and this is where I come from, and this is what I've been through. And he's always just been like, okay, like, you know, and he asks a lot of questions about David. You know, we've watched a lot of, like, David had headcam video from his first deployment of just like patrols, and it's really funny stuff of like his dog getting stuck in like a net, like, you know, and Ryan is like, I think he really tries to kind of learn about who David was, because he understands that a lot of who I am and what I am now is because of that. And I'm very, very lucky to have that, because there were, you know, a couple times when I first started dating, there were guys that were like, we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, I am like, no way. Like, I would not want to hop into those.
Yeah.
At all.
And I totally get that. I, you know, I try to think about it from my end, like, you know, flip that around. I think that would be really hard to date somebody who, you know, has been through something like that, where, you know, they talk about them, you know, that's your soulmate that you've lost. And Ryan's just really awesome about it. And he's amazing. And I love him a lot, and I'm very lucky to have him, and his family is amazing. And yeah, I'm very lucky to have both of them.
And we talked about a news story that came out that there is legislation that is going through the process now about, and it's essentially targeted to people like you, like who are Gold Star wives and spouses. Now the legislation says that if you got remarried, you would lose a lot of the benefits. Seeing that legislation is going through, is that something that is a relief to you where you can kind of move on? Because I'm sure that there is parts where you're like, this is financial security for me for a long time. That's tough to deal with.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I've thought about. And Ryan and I have been together now for almost 3 years. And so, you know, inevitably, you know, talking about marriage comes up, and it's one of those things where right now it just doesn't make any sense because I'm on TRICARE. And I have to say, I'm very, very, very blessed, especially because, you know, spouses from Vietnam, spouses from Korea, the way that they were treated when their loved ones died, and even, you know, the soldiers in Vietnam and all that, they didn't receive any of the benefits that I receive now. And I will forever be thankful for the support that I've had. But yeah, I mean, you're right. The healthcare cannot be beat.
You pay what, like $560 for the year?
Yeah, it's insane. And
foolish.
I mean, yeah. And that's how exactly, like you said, the benefits. And not only that, but I lose that kind of next of kin status. And that's kind of all the things that I don't want to let that go. That David will always be my husband, you know, and I lose that connection to the military and to that part. So yeah, I mean, it is a really tough place to be in because I don't want to sound like, you know, selfish and money hungry all of that. And that's why I'm not married.
I don't think that anybody would ever say that that's a selfish thing at all. Like, I think that the benefits that Gold Star families get is too little. But I also think that as you were 22 years old, 21 years old, you should be able to, if you find love again, like you have, be able to marry them and do whatever you want to. The government shouldn't be involved in that.
Yeah. And I definitely agree. And I've seen a lot of, you know, there is this push from a lot of mostly wives and spouses that are my age, that are, you know, even a little bit older, that the legislature right now is that if you marry before, I believe it's 52, then you lose all the benefits that you have. And it's kind of interesting because if you divorce that person that you have remarried, you can file to get your benefits back. So they're willing to give them back to you if you divorce that person after the fact.
And honestly, that's a sexist policy.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very sexist policy. Even if it does apply to men the same way as it does women, it's designed to say that you have a provider, like instead of it being like essentially an insurance policy, which is what it is.
Exactly. And I think that that's what's kind of crazy about it is that, like, I can totally, you know, I can support myself on my own, and I have a job, I have a full-time job. You know, that was definitely something that I wasn't going to just rely on the support from the government. I was going to always have a job. And so, yeah, it is totally about that. It's that, well, now you're married to some other guy now, and he can pay for your living. And
fuck
your
that, insurance. Honey. We're too strong in 2019.
Exactly. Like, I make my own money.
We listen to Beyonce now. She's on Spotify.
Yes. She is our queen. She has told us how to live our life. So yeah, it is. It's an interesting conundrum to be in because it is one thing that, you know, I don't think especially not something that I thought about at all in this journey, but then now, you know, have somebody who I love and I would like to marry, but that just right now isn't really the smartest decision because of all the benefits that I do have.
So. And one last thing, tell us a little bit about War Dogs.
War Dogs. So I think that started as one of the guys from the unit made a shirt with all of the, I think it was just the canine handlers, like the meth canine handlers. And it's totally now turned into this like honoring of all, every and all canine handler and, you know, there were some Vietnam vets that came and we were in California. They did a barbecue for us every year. And they were the ones who talked about like War Dogs. And they're just some really good dudes. And they've got the Dogs Project. And David's dad created the Rocky Mountain Dogs Project after David was killed. And he kind of services like Colorado and a lot of other areas too. And it's just really this community.
That dude knows how to work a barbecue pit.
He does. Oh my goodness. I have to say that's one thing I miss about Colorado is all of Kevin's barbecue being readily available.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a really amazing community of people. And I feel very lucky that, you know, I've had the opportunity to be a part of it and that, you know, I'm still really close with a lot of those guys. And, You know, they're all over the place now, but we still manage to see each other, you know, once a year. And then Kevin sure puts on a good party and barbecue, so that's a good reason to get together. And I think just being able to honor all those guys and the dogs too, because I think that, you know, this is really a community of people that the dogs are just as much a part of the military as they are. And I just think it's a really cool thing that they do.
Well, I want to tell you before we go that our listeners are going to be surprised that I didn't cry during, but I didn't feel like I need to be honest, and I did a little bit before I pressed record.
So, that is true.
So we got through it. Tori, thank you so much for your time. I'm so happy to see that you're doing well, and we appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Please clap.
Again, thanks so much to Tori for coming on the show. That just takes so much courage to tell so in depth and be emotionally raw and honest and just going through that. Because I know, for instance, whenever we tell stories that are close to our heart about getting wounded or some of the things that we went through with PTSD and how we're still dealing with depression and things like that that most likely stem from our service, her having to go through those wounds and make them fresh again and tell the story and recalling what it was like seeing the people get out of the car to come notify her is just brave.
You took the word right out of my mouth. I mean, to relive that and then to share that story with our listeners takes a level of courage that is not common to most folks. So we are just so grateful for Tori to come and tell us the great story about her husband.
Yeah, it was great. And I'm super excited. We haven't said this anywhere on Twitter or anything like that. I'm super pumped because Tori is actually meeting us down here in Charlotte.
Yes.
She's going to be a super big part of what's going on this weekend. Race experience. She's also, David Sonka's name is actually going to be on the pace car for the real Coca-Cola 600.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and she's going to get to go and see that herself, and we're going to get to be there with her when she does it. And it's just worth noting, every single car in the race this weekend, it's 600 miles of remembrance. Every single one is going to have the name of a fallen service member on the windshield, front and center. Maybe not center. They might need to see. But it's going
to
be.
They probably need to see.
They probably need to see. But I just think that's really cool and a neat way to do it.
Yeah, it's something that's just so small, but I can just imagine the feelings that it evokes in the families and friends of those service members who have those names on those cars. It's just a special way to remember them, to get their name out there.
And that's what it's all about. I think, again, it's not about barbecues this weekend. It is. It's about spending time with the people you love and remembering the people that aren't here that you love.
Because I've talked to Tori since we've had the interview, and I guarantee you she's coming down to have a good time.
Yeah, she's absolutely
not going to be walking around the racetrack going 180 miles an hour being Sad Sack Sally.
At the same time, it can be a really difficult weekend for people, and there's resources out there. Our DMs are open. GetHeadStrong.org. There's places you can go, but you are so not alone. If you're having a tough time this weekend, know there's so many other military members and veterans and family members out there whose hearts are hurting too. It's bittersweet.
It's definitely an important weekend to get on the phone, call your buddies, because you are going to be stuck in traffic. We normally do not endorse texting or talking while driving. We endorse it this weekend.
Give someone a call.
Give a little call on your way down.
Yeah.
Because they're probably going to be stuck in traffic too. And don't do it your first 45 minutes. Well, you're doing it first 45 minutes now because you're actually listening while you're driving.
Indeed.
Most likely. You can do that. But make sure you call your battle buddy. It's important.
And you know, we've said it past Memorial Days. You think about what would these guys and gals who have sacrificed, what would they want you to be doing on this weekend? They wouldn't want you to be sitting around feeling sorry for them. They would want you to be having a good time and embracing the weekend, all the while remembering their legacy, remembering their good names. So don't let anyone bully you into saying or thinking that you cannot have a nice time this weekend.
Right. And that was a big thought of, like, in the culture for a long time. Like, you would constantly see those memes because, especially for civilians, they don't know what military culture is like. I know for a fact my buddy Chris Diaz would whoop my ass if he thought I was sitting at home just thinking about him and not going out and having a good time.
Like,
whoop
my ass. I have to sit home all day and do nothing because I'd be upsetting Chris otherwise.
Right.
No, and completely wrong.
Because I'm watching the Viking show on Amazon Viking, and they're talking about Valhalla, and Valhalla is a real place. And I imagine as soon as I got to Odin's Hall, Chris Diaz would be waiting to cut my fucking head off again.
Yeah. I have to tell you, my favorite strip club in...
That's a natural transition.
Yeah, my favorite.
Thank you.
My favorite strip club in Atlanta. I follow them on Instagram.
Wait. Time out. You have a favorite strip club in Atlanta? Do you have favorite strip clubs just all over the country?
Oh, yeah. My favorite one in New York is the basketball one. But anyways.
You know, you live in New York. I'm talking about just other parts of the country.
No, but my favorite one, the Clermont Lounge in Atlanta, actually posted one on their Instagram that, in case you thought it was about a three-day weekend, parties in the beach. It's Memorial Day. And I was like, Clermont Lounge, you're a strip club. You're still going to be open this weekend.
You stick to shaking titties.
Yeah. You keep shaking your titties for, you know.
For everybody.
For everybody.
Not just guys.
For the ladies.
You love it.
Big fan.
Yeah. Do not MDW shame.
So, yeah. I saw that and I was like, strip club, no.
We don't titty shame. We don't Memorial Day partying shame.
No. Yeah.
Go out there and have a good time. But we did. Our guy Kyle's coming down, too.
That'll be great to have Kyle in person.
Yeah.
At Son of a Gun on Twitter, he has been the guy who's, if you've noticed, an uptick in our social media lately. And it's way funnier, I hate to admit, than when I was running it. He's absolutely crushing it. So I am so excited to meet her. I'm excited to meet Kyle. I'm just really looking forward to this weekend.
But Kyle posted out some questions from ZBT, and I think it's very appropriate to talk about them on a military weekend. So we have some questions, mostly from civilians, about military. You want to jump into some of these?
Yes, please. A lot of good questions. So thank you to all who submitted.
And ask the truth.
If we don't get to your question today, don't worry.
Then fuck you. That's what.
Fuck you, bitch.
We'll keep it on the back burner and use it at another time.
All right. So the first one comes at us from @J_Kerr. Okay. I know this might sound real dumb, but if you guys aren't going on a mission or whatever, I have no clue. What are you guys doing to pass the time? Okay. We'll start with you.
We know I'm ripping cigs in the smoke pit.
I knew your answer was going to be real quick.
Yeah. But you're right. It's small moments of activity punctuated by long spans of nothingness.
Hurry up and wait is a term in the military for a reason.
One of my favorite, The Onion did a Call of Duty 5. And in this Call of Duty, you play a soldier in Afghanistan who mostly just waits for his package of socks to arrive from his mom. That's like all you do in the game. There's like no activity happening at all. But yeah, you train. You train and you hang out with your friends.
But yeah, like on deployments, you know, you're only going to go out on a mission, any, I don't know, anywhere from 4 to 8 hours. So obviously the rest of the day is filled with other activities. You got to eat. So you got to go to the chow hall. A lot of guys work out a ton. Video games. So I would
cleaning.
Say those, yeah.
Cleaning and prep.
Cleaning your weapon.
Eating Otis Bunkmeyer cookies and Crush and Rip It's.
Yeah.
Shitting in a plastic bag.
But I will jerking admit, off. There's
oh,
old,
yeah.
there's
oh,
that.
Yeah.
Lots of jerking
there's
off.
That. And if you're a lady playing, strumming the old air guitar, you know what I mean. Played a few chords in my day.
Doing a little desktop DJ.
Take it down the old town road.
What was your guys' favorite thing to do during deployment, during your downtime?
Air guitar.
Silly question.
Yeah. Rubbing one out, see how far I could shoot it up the wall before my buddy got there.
Yeah.
But, okay.
I played a lot of cards. And
spades.
It was terrible.
So much spades.
I also, after I got shot, I went and bought a PlayStation. I think it was 3 at the time. Mm-hmm. PlayStation 3 had came out, and they had MLB The Show.
Okay.
And I would start a season, and I got really fucking good at the game. I would start the season, and if somebody got a hit on me, I would start the season over.
Right.
I would do like a 52-game season and try to do
no hitters. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd get to nothing else to do.
Game 38 and be like, start it over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got really into One Tree Hill. Me and my battle buddy Rob. One Tree Hill.
One
Seasons
Tree Hill.
One through five. You watch
MLB.
A lot of stuff. But no, you come up with stupid things to do. I can remember we started doing, remember those honey buns you get in the packages? We started doing the honey bun challenge.
Oh, yeah.
So you just see how fast you could eat it.
Yeah.
And then people would start gambling on different people. Like, you pit one guy against the other and who could eat the honey bun faster.
I actually like to see how fast I could eat one while I was masturbating. Wow.
I actually masturbated with a honey bun.
Yep.
So.
So. Yeah. Sweet glaze.
Double stick.
Are we taking it too far?
The double stick. That's what they call him.
Oh, right.
The old
Maybe
double
next
stick.
Question.
All right, next one. This one, I think it's very specifically right up Kate's alley. At the Kip Wilson, how do so many Armed Forces members smoke cigarettes yet maintain the physique to run long distances? Is it harder to quit smoking in the service or easier to pick it up?
Oh, man.
It's a two-part question there.
Yeah.
Kate.
Well, I smoked before the service, and I think on the enlisted side, that's a common thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I smoked Marlboro Reds actually before
Whoa.
I joined.
Jesus
and then
Christ.
I got poor and I smoked Jacks, which wow. is like
oh, yeah.
had the Jack of cards on the front. But then once I joined too, it's such a social thing, the
yeah.
smoke pit. But also you're in the prime of your life, so you feel like it doesn't affect you at all. You finish running 3 miles, as soon as you're done, you're lighting up a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you stay in shape while you do it? Again, I'm going to have to say masturbating.
And it's full force. Like, you constantly have to work out, so you don't really have a choice. And you're young.
Yes,
I mean,
that's
a big
is.
Part of it, too. You're
yep.
very, very young. I remember my drill instructors being like, I know some of you nasty motherfuckers are going to go 13 weeks here getting in the best shape of your lives, and the first thing you're going to do on your nasty little family day is pull your little dick skinners out, get your cigarettes, and shove it down your fucking little gullet. And like so many were like, yes, that
yep,
is exactly
that's me. That's what
I'm
I did.
Yeah, so it's just
weeks.
A combination, I think, of just working out all the time
yep.
and being young, so
yep.
it doesn't affect you as much. I think you'll find... probably as you get older, less people are smoking as much.
I'm definitely
so
not in
the
shape.
Second part of that question is an interesting one. Do you think it's harder to quit or easier to start when you're in the military?
Oh, easier to
easier
start.
Easier to start. I mean, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. If you are a smoker and you're trying to quit while you're on active duty.
Forget it.
That's impossible.
Forget
right.
it.
That's impossible.
Especially if you're deployed.
Oh, if you're deployed, yeah. I know plenty of people who weren't smokers who just smoked on deployments because, again, you have so much time. So
you also get FOMO. You're walking by and you see everybody in the smoke pit hooting and hollering, and you're like, I want to be over there.
Right, right.
Yeah.
This isn't one that we normally get into. We don't really gun goof a lot on the
no.
podcast.
No.
We don't really talk
None
about weapons.
None of us are gun it's people, really.
Yeah, we're really not. But it's a good question still. Favorite firearm or weapon that you used?
Well, I mean, I get, is it personal weapon? I guess...
Say what you want, Colin.
I want to say the paladins that I was in charge
yeah, why
of.
Why would you not say that?
Yeah,
of course.
The paladins. I mean, those things were just
I'm gonna
powerful
ask,
as shit.
What the fuck is that?
It's a 155 howitzer. You know, basically the cannon attached to the tank.
You pull the cord and
you
it's
pull
like,
the little cord, yeah, and
yeah.
it goes a little more than a patoot. You can really feel it.
You guys, honest to God, need to give everybody, every service member on every deployed base, a text alert that you're about to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Have
oh,
I
yeah.
ever told you that story?
No, no.
When
but
I got off the helicopter back to Camp Fallujah after I had gotten surgery, and I was walking back into the reconnaissance building, and they had moved the guns back
mm-hmm.
closer to Camp Fallujah, where you knew like a while ago, like this is what it sounds like, artillery is going out, but it was a good distance away.
Sure.
They moved it back damn near on the fob.
Okay.
And I was walking in, and it just goes, it was so loud, just over and over and over
mm-hmm.
again. And I was like, I like crumbled to the ground. It was like 3 days after I got shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so,
so
I was
yeah.
just like, mother of Christ.
Yeah, because
and, like,
if you're
collapsed
not
to the ground.
I mean, if you're in infantry or, you know, a Cav Scout, you're not used to hearing artillery. And you don't realize that incoming and outgoing have different
don't put
sounds.
A lot of dogs on the artillery shelves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it can scare you. I can remember one time someone coming to one of our main bases, and it was nighttime, and then all of a sudden you just catch that muzzle flash, and you hear that explosion, and the person, I won't name names, went right to their knees.
Oh yeah, I could see it.
My master sergeant was like, "Get your bitch ass up!" Was like, "Roger that, top." Got it.
I have to imagine when like it's the heat of things, and like you're in a groove or whatever, and you're. It's got to move a little bit.
Ooh,
oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's something that I should note that's interesting, too. People would think, like, there's just, like, really advanced firing mechanism for these paladins. No, it's actually just a string
yeah.
that you just pull, like, a little tug, and it shoots
like a tampon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the period Tuesday of weapons.
Yeah.
More or less.
Love it. It's true.
All right, this next one. Oh, wait, what's your favorite weapon?
M4.
Really?
Yeah, I loved... It sucked that it was so early, but I loved qualifying week on the rifle range.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed shooting. I grew up around guns, and like I grew up with that kind of stuff, so I actually always genuinely enjoyed it, and it's kind of felt like a sport, like a week where I got to do something I love.
Hmm.
So yeah, I've always really enjoyed M16, M4. Yeah, what's yours?
Military working dog.
There you go. Yeah. Oh, that's a great answer.
Love yeah. that answer.
All right, so next one, again, heavy smoking questions. This one's from Sandwich One. What and where are smoke pits located? Is it like a dedicated smoking zone in a parking lot or whatever?
Yes. So normally every barracks has one, or in the middle of a group of barracks, there will be one. It normally has a roof over it. There's a barbecue grill a lot of times. There's picnic tables. It's kind of like a mini picnic area for smoking cigs. And then overseas, usually if you're on a forward operating base, it'd be a circle just of sandbags. Like you just make some benches of sandbags pretty much. But then the guys would like pimp them out. So they got fancier and fancier and more knickknacks around them and more this and that. And like it became a cool like camo netting this and maybe some hot lady pictures and maybe some hot dude pictures if I was
so around. My favorite smoke pit related story. I had a master gunnery sergeant, trying to think of what his name is. Master Gunnery Sergeant Jensen.
Yeah.
I had just gotten promoted to staff sergeant. So I was the company gunnery sergeant at Quantico. It might be a different one than Jensen. I could see his face, but I can't remember his name. Anyways, so we were sitting in my office, and as a company gunnery sergeant, your job is to kind of make sure that everything around your battalion area, your company area, is clean and good to go. Like, you're not doing it yourself, but you're ensuring it, that it's done. The master guns, the day after I got promoted, came into my office with an ammo can full of cigarette butts.
Oh, yeah. Uh-oh.
And threw it against my wall.
Oh, gross.
And it, like, had been raining. It spit, like, all the spit and shit that was in there because people also spit in there.
Oh, yeah.
It went everywhere. Got on, like, my dress blues, came on my trousers. And I was like, what in the fuck, Master Guns? Like, I stood up and I was like, what's wrong, Master Guns? He's like, there's fucking smoke pit all over the place. I was like, the Marines just went outside and they combined them all together and they were going to get a trash bag to fill it.
No.
And he's like, that's my bad, dog. And just walked back upstairs.
Oh,
and I just stood there in my office like,
what the
this
hell?
This is my second day as a staff sergeant and you're throwing fucking old ammo cans.
That's disgusting.
It smelled
gross.
Yep. So bad, yeah. Man. So bad.
That's another part of it too, though, is the ammo can is where you put your butts.
Yeah, and it never smells good. Whenever we would get our hands on cigars, though, when I was deployed, I was never a smoker of cigarettes, but I smoked cigars. I would never go to the smoke pit, though, because I was like, oh, cigars. It's a little different.
Well, officers shouldn't be allowed in a smoke pit anyway.
That's also
time.
True. Yeah. Yes.
Very true.
That's enlisted time. You have to have your time to be yourself, like get away from it all. And that's where the smoke pit for. Another question that Khan's wanted to answer. Hey, guys, love the pods. USM question. Would it be a dipshit move to enlist rather than go to OCS if you have a degree? It's hilarious to hear chaps' attitude towards officers, and I get the impression a fair amount of them are kind of soft, aren't the best leaders. Obviously, enlist and OCS are two totally different paths, so I would love to hear your thoughts. Do you want me to give mine first and you can finish
it? Yeah, go ahead. Yes.
I disagree with that at all. If I ever give the inclination that Marine Corps officers or officers in general are soft, that is not what I want to give off at all. Marine Corps officers, by far, do more physical training than the enlisted to start out. There is no question in my mind about that.
They have their shit together.
The average person who goes to Marine Corps boot camp would not even come close to qualifying to meet the physical standards of a Marine officer at Officer Cannon School. No matter what, you're talking lawyer, you're talking somebody who is going to be a supply officer, the initial training requirements of a Marine Corps officer are intense and they are not soft.
Yeah, and so what I think a lot of times is that people get an impression that officers are dumb and, you know, the joke is, oh, the lieutenant's lost again. Because by and large, the time when enlisted folks at the lower ranks are going to interact with officers most are when they're second, first lieutenant with a platoon leader. As you move up the officer ranks, you're not going to deal with officers as much. So your exposure to officers are these young guys who are fresh out of OCS, fresh out of ROTC, fresh out of one of the academies. So they're young. They're still learning.
There's
right?
a learning curve.
Yeah, they don't know everything. So you think about it, if you were a PFC with only 1 year experience, you're not going to know as much as the 15-year sergeant first class.
Right.
So I think when officers make mistakes, it's just a byproduct sometimes of that lack of experience. So if all you see is officers constantly making mistakes, you might get the impression that, oh man, officers are dumb and my senior NCOs are the real smart ones, when you got to just sometimes give them the benefit of the doubt.
And there is some truth to O1s and O2s being dumb.
Yes,
there is.
Absolutely.
Once you start to transition into the captain ranks, you've been in a while, you have like usually at least 5 years of experience, 4 or 5 years of experience, so you've been doing the damn thing a little longer. The differences between, we often highlight the differences between Marine Corps officers and
Army and Air Force and Navy officers, from what I've seen, Marine leaders that are like E6 and above take way more responsibility of the individual training. Marine officers dictate what the training is going to be, and then we devise a plan on how to actually get it done.
All right,
so we have one last question, and then we'll close out the show. This one is from T-Bon1551. What are people in the military's opinion on civilians who say... Nope, that's not the one I wanted to do. Here we go. This is from Amber Diz. We'll do that another time. Amber Diz said, individually, what do you prefer as a thanks when a civilian shows gratitude? Thank you for your service, etc.
I feel like there's no wrong way. And it is a little awkward sometimes because you feel like, well, I didn't do anything, but... I always just appreciate it. I never roll my eyes at it. I always genuinely appreciate when someone's, I don't expect it and I don't look for it, but when it happens, it does mean it's nice. I don't think there's any wrong way at all.
I completely agree with
Except buy me a beer. That's the one. That's what I meant to say.
I'm sorry, I screwed that up.
Buy me a beer.
Right. I think the exact same thing. I think that we are in a position in this generation of warrior who is luckily to get thanked. And yep. I think that sometimes it does, completely honest with civilian listener, it does make you uncomfortable, like, sometimes to get thanked. Like, you do feel like sometimes, oh, I'm not doing this anymore. That's a lifetime ago for me. Like, there's so many other people who are more deserving. But the overall arching attitude towards it, it's appreciation.
I agree with all that. Let me ask you guys a question that just been bouncing around in my brain recently. Do you ever find yourselves sitting around reading about articles about the service or see something on the news and think, like, did I do enough?
I feel like I did what I could in my time, and I did it to the best of my ability, so that's that. And I try not to dwell on it.
I sometimes wonder where I would be. Like, I don't wonder if I did enough. I think, everything that I could in the time that I had. But I do wonder, like, where my career would be now if I hadn't, or the type of person that I would be. Mm-hmm. Probably not great. Like, just being honest, probably not great.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I've asked myself that question, and I haven't really answered it for myself yet, but it's been something that I've been rattling around in there, and it pops up from time to time, wondering, like, oh, did I do enough?
I'll answer it for you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're good. There you go.
But I agree with you. When I was going through school, when I went back to UTSA, I would constantly sit around and kind of fucking hate my life. Like, what is my purpose? I went from having something that I viewed as a very high purpose and going to work every day and, quote, protecting people or doing what I could to swear to defend the Constitution. And then I was just writing in class in UTSA and not feeling like I was doing anything.
Yeah.
This podcast has really helped me find that. So if you are a veteran sitting there wondering if you've completed, like, everything that you need to do, look out. Try to find your purpose. Volunteer with local organizations. Get involved with as many, like, veteran organizations as you possibly can. Find your purpose again.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Red, White, and Blue Team. There's one in almost every city. The Mission Continues, where you can volunteer. That's how I helped get back on my feet when I first got out, volunteering in my local community.
Quote and retweet Zero Block 30. That always helps.
That too. And continue to buy us beers.
Yes, please.
All right. Well, everybody, you have a great Memorial Day weekend. Save rounds.
Please, everyone, be out in your driveways tonight, 1700, with your cars ready. Have the chalk blocks under it. I'll be inspecting your 96 paperwork. I expect all the tires to be full, the gas tank to be full. I want to see your inspection sticker. I want to know when you had your last oil change. And you're not to leave a 75-mile radius.
Are you 75? It's a 96.
Well, you should have cleaned your rooms.
Wow.
Okay. How about that?
All right.
I'm going to say, I hope you have something that's a little more light, because this, what I want to say is just not that. But recently, I took a trip with my father, and we went up to West Point for the day for a lacrosse game. Big surprise. But before we went to the stadium, we went to the cemetery at West Point, because that's where my father's parents are buried. So he just, you know, wanted to go say hello. And he had walked up ahead, and right at the entrance, I kind of turned left, and it's where the newer plots were in the cemetery. And as I'm reading the tombstones, it gave me pause, because I kept saying, oh, wow, I knew him, or I knew her. And it kind of just struck me that now we're that generation, different from previous generation, where we're going to be the ones who have fallen, the friends who served and ultimately made that sacrifice. So it just struck me as something that was just not something I'd given much thought to before, but how, you know, guys coming through the military, guys and gals in the 80s, 90s, they didn't necessarily have to deal with that as much. And now, just going back to the message that we had at the beginning, you know, reach out to your buddies because they're the ones, we're the ones dealing with that loss on Memorial Day. And maybe Memorial Day carries a little more weight for us as a result. So just keep that in mind.
I agree. And that's the same thing. I've talked about it with Kate, too, whenever we hear in the Marine Corps birthday message now when they mention Fallujah and Marja. You're just like, fuck, that was, that's crazy. Like, to be mentioned alongside of, like, the Battle of Way City or Okinawa, like,
I'm getting chills right now.
It makes you just think about, it answers your question, did I do enough?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a great answer, you're right.
Definitely thinking of, just personally, Corporal Keaton Coffey and Lance Corporal Derek Hernandez this weekend and their families, and anybody out there who's missing somebody or remembering somebody, we're remembering you, too, and thinking of you. And holding you in our weak little ZBT arms.
Yeah, I was actually
strong, but
I want to give the guys over at Spittin' Chiclets a mention because today is episode Thursday. Ryan Whitney mentioned the story of First Lieutenant Derek Hines, who gave his life in Afghanistan in a firefight. So I just wanted to mention his name as well.
There we go. All right, sound the retreat.